The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Support for Midwest Swing comes from baseball. Baseball, folks, it's definitely good. Hey guys, it's Brandon Warren coming back at you with another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which can be found on Twitter at Zone Coverage. Yeah, man. Again, I am your host, Brandon Warren. Find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. It is a very special show today. It is a very dreary and upsetting show, but we do have a special guest, Corey Seidman of TSN Philly is joining us at C Seidman NBCS on Twitter. Corey, what's going on?
Hey, Brandon. It's just a very hard day around these parts. Very shocking news yesterday. No, obviously nobody expected that Roy Halladay would be leaving this world so soon. And it's just, a lot of people, I think, are just still kind of trying to process this news.
Yeah, and so for anybody who may not have heard, which, you know, it might be hard to believe, but let's just not rule anything out. Yesterday, a plane crashed down by St. Petersburg, Florida, and for, I don't know how long it was necessarily, we were all kind of kept in suspense, but, you know, the news came out that it was a plane registered to Roy Halladay, one that was actually a 2018 model that he had recently purchased, and then we were all kind of sitting, waiting on pins and needles to find out if it was him. I got to ask you, Corey, especially during that time, it just seemed like such a weird dynamic, you know, fans saying, gee, I hope it's not Roy, but at the same time, like, it's still tragic no matter who it is. But, you know, what were you feeling, or what was your sense of, like, the feeling about this? Was there a sense of dread or foreboding for people like you?
Well, so the announcement that it was Roy Halladay, that came at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Yeah.
I got a tip around 1 p.m. Eastern time yesterday that the plane that the tail matching Roy Halladay's plane, that plane had crashed in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, when we found that out, you know, we didn't want to jump it because there's no benefit to being the first outlet to report something like that, you know,
right.
And, it could have been other things. It could have been someone else in the plane, et cetera. But as soon as we saw the Pasco County Sheriff's Department call a press conference, the first press conference, which was around 3:30, you kind of knew that it had to be Halladay, because if it wasn't, I don't think they would have called a press conference.
Right.
And as every bit of news just kind of trickled out, you know, I'm watching people on Twitter react to it. I'm watching different people say, oh, don't assume anything, people. It might not be real. And here I am sitting over here and I know it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of just having to hold my breath about it. But, you know, it was just a really tough time. I mean, my jaw dropped. Roy Halladay has always been obsessed with flying. His dad was a pilot. He retired in 2013 and for a lot of these guys need to find a way to get that adrenaline after their playing career. And, you know, I mean, you see a lot of athletes competitive in some form, but Roy Halladay, for him, that adrenaline rush was flying. And this was how he wanted to spend kind of the rest of his life. He was an amateur pilot. And, you know, he was going to spend these years coaching his sons in high school. He has two boys that are just about teenage age. I think one's 16, the other's 14.
Ugh.
And there was even the distinct possibility that he was going to join the Phillies, come back to the Phillies in a couple of years after his sons had graduated from high school. The Phillies kind of wanted him to, for their young players, specifically their pitchers, because Halladay early in his career was able to overcome some real mental hurdles to turn into one of the most dominant pitchers of his era, probably the most dominant pitcher of his era. So
mm-hmm.
He had just so many things left to do. And that's what, you know, like you said, no matter who it was, this was going to be sad that someone died in a plane crash. But with someone like Roy Halladay, he just had so much life left. And, you know, I can't even imagine how his family feels just thinking, you know, to be his kids thinking, okay, our rich, famous dad, now we have him for the next however many decades of our life. And just like that, it's yanked from underneath of you.
Yeah. And so Brandon McCarthy had tweeted, please don't be Roy. And I think people conflated the logic of it's still tragic when someone dies in a plane crash with the fact that, like, okay, people, Brandon McCarthy knew Roy Halladay. I don't know Roy Halladay. You know, I know you would probably have a much closer, you know, tie with him. But, like, Brandon McCarthy knew Roy Halladay. And I think people don't really understand the layers to, like, they just spout out, you know, oh, it's tragic no matter who dies. Yeah, well, it's tragic when someone you know dies. It's the same reason why we rubberneck accidents. It's like, oh, I hope it's not someone I know. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person for saying that. It's just that we're conditioned to not want it to be someone we know. And because we feel like we know these athletes because we watch them on TV for 3 hours per night for 162 nights a year, or in Halladay's case, 35 nights per year, we grow conditioned to think we know them, and we need to differentiate the fact that we think they know them. But seriously, he actually knows Roy Halladay. And that's why I was like, right. I was so frustrated. Like, he's allowed to say, I hope it isn't Roy. Like, that's totally different than if I say it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And you know what? Quite frankly, even if you said it, I don't think it's an issue, because,
well, you don't need to be that well actually person. Like, that also, that person,
right,
also.
Exactly. Just, and that's what that, you know, there's so many other. You brought that up because that really pissed me off too. Because it's just people on Twitter love to have those gotcha moments where, yep, someone tweets something not thinking at all that there's going to be this response to it, but someone comes back with snark because they want to get retweets and likes as the first response to that tweet, and that's what happens. And, like, you know, if I'm Brandon McCarthy, I don't know if he ignored it or if he even bothered responding to people yesterday, but, like, seriously, you know, seriously, in this moment, that's what you're doing? You're trying to lecture me on what you think that I meant by this, and that's just kind of the world we live in, man.
Yeah, and I've started to tune that out. I used to be a slap fight on Twitter guy. In fact, it's been not that long that maybe it's because I became a dad. Maybe it's because I'm just trying to mature and kind of move into my career, you know, kind of like you have. I just don't have time for this stuff anymore. I don't have the energy for these slap fights, and nobody comes out looking good. It's just you mute and move on. And so I don't have time for this, but nobody likes the well actually person. They people just don't realize that. Nobody likes that.
Right. And the other thing, like you said, nobody ever comes out of that argument saying, oh, you know what? I see your point. You're right. I was wrong. Nobody ever does that.
Or observers don't say, oh, man, that guy looked really good. It's like you stooped to that level. It was just like,
right,
even if you're the winner of the debate, you still look like a dummy. So I don't want to get too far away from the point, but I just, yeah, I felt like that was really annoying.
Yeah.
So between the time that you found out a plane had crashed and the final confirmation, internally, I mean, is it just a gut churn for you, your head spinning? Again, I know we're not, like, intimate friends with these kind of people, but for me, I guess the closest similarities are, I know, you know, Kirby Puckett died when he was a young man, not obviously a celebrator of an individual off the field as Roy Halladay, but maybe a more apt comparison was when a body was found at Prince's mansion and it ended up being Prince. We had that stretch in between where we're like, man, I hope it's not Prince, and it ended up being Prince, you know? Is it just like your mind kind of spins and your guts just kind of churn because, you know, deep down you just kind of have this dread knowing that it's probably that?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday was really a blur for me. After I found out, you know, it's like I found out at 1 o'clock, and so I got the story prepared just to have up for whenever we did get confirmation.
Right.
And I just kept coming back to just the first sentence of it. Roy Halladay has died at the age of 40. Like, it still doesn't even sound real. That to me was just the hardest part, trying to wrap my head around this guy's not going to get to make his own Hall of Fame acceptance speech.
40's not old, man. Holy crap.
No, it's not. And I mean, he's been retired, what, 4 years? And it's a 5-year period that you have to wait until you're Hall of Fame eligible. To me, he's a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer even before this tragedy. And to just combine that with, like, you know, the Phillies do this Wall of Fame ceremony every summer where they induct one person into their Wall of Fame. And Roy Halladay was absolutely 100% going to be inducted at some point over the next couple years. Mm-hmm. And it's always a really cool weekend at Citizens Bank Park because all the Wall of Fame inductees kind of come back. And it's this moment where before a couple games you have I don't know, 15 to 20 legends standing on the field, and it's a great moment for all these guys to get back to seeing each other and get the fans to see them. And I think a lot of Phillies fans were expecting that they'd see Roy Halladay at least once a summer every year for the next, I don't know, 30, 40 years. And again, that's not going to happen now.
Have you written a retrospective or an opinion piece, or have you had to kind of stick to newsy stuff?
I haven't yet, just because yesterday at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com, we had several different columns and we had several different reaction pieces. And personally, you know, my take on things like this, and I know that personally I probably need to get past this, but I don't like to make it about myself.
No, it's a good journalism tactic, let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, but like, I mean it even beyond that. Like, I'm not the kind of person who likes to talk about myself just
sure.
in everyday life. And I don't want to take away, you know, I don't think it would diminish the news at all. But it's almost like, I think to myself, why does someone care what my personal feeling
sure,
was?
Yeah.
You know, there were so many people who were closer to him. I thought that Chase Utley had maybe the most beautiful little statement that he released, where at the end of it, he said, "Rest in peace, Roy, although knowing you, rest isn't in your vocabulary."
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, Chase Utley and Roy Halladay, that was one of the things that stuck out to me thinking about today, was those two guys loved each other. They were obsessed with each other. I mean, there was a definite bromance between the two of them. I remember when Halladay got here, he would just gush about Utley, and he would say things like, "That's what I want my kids to play like when they grow up." And, you know, in many ways, Utley was like the position player version of Halladay in terms of tireless work ethic, mm-hmm. getting to the ballpark at 5:45 in the morning. Utley told a story yesterday that the first time he met Halladay was in spring training the year after the Phillies got him. And on literally the first day of camp, he gets to the Phillies spring training facility. It's 4:45 a.m. Halliday's covered in sweat. And Utley said, like, "What was it, raining outside or something?" And Halladay said, "No, I just finished my workout. This is 5 o'clock in the morning on the first day of spring training." So, I mean, that kind of just speaks to the type of worker he was and why so many people in Philadelphia identified with him. I think it's pretty interesting that a guy who spent 4 years here has been celebrated and remembered as if he spent his entire career here.
Mm-hmm. Have you read any of the retrospectives yet, or have you had any time to do that?
Yeah, my colleague Jim Salisbury at NBC Sports Philadelphia, he wrote a really good piece the night that it happened, and he kind of just retold a story that he observed at Wrigley Field in 2013, which was Halladay's final year, when he just couldn't throw a strike. The ball was going all over the place. He had problems with his back, problems with his shoulder, problems with his groin, problems with his legs, mm-hmm. and Halladay had this one outing where he was just covered in sweat, even though it wasn't a very hot day, and he got rocked. And yet the next day at Wrigley Field, he does his day after start stretching and running and everything like that. And he was right about to kind of go back into the Phillies clubhouse when a kid shouted out his name. And it almost sounds like that Mean Joe Green commercial, you know, where Halladay stops in the tunnel and he waits. And this is after getting done a pretty intense workout when he should be in a pretty foul mood because he's struggling. And you wouldn't know it. I mean, he sat there and he talked to the kid for a couple minutes. He signed for him. And, you know, when Jim was retelling that story, it was just kind of just put in perspective the type of man he was. I know that when things like this happen, we tend to use really flowery language mm-hmm. in remembering the person. But Roy Halladay is someone who's just so beloved. I mean, and not just in the two cities where he played. Like, you watch how other athletes and other sports reacted yesterday. You saw that this guy was one of a kind. And, you know, I think the thing that I'm just trying to wrap my head around now is when someone dies at such a young age, it almost becomes the first thing that you think about when you hear their name. Like, when you hear the name Darryl Kyle, for example, mm-hmm. you don't think about what he did on the field. You don't think about his career. Yeah, Thurman Munson's another example. Jerome Brown, who was a really good Eagles defensive end who tragically died at a young age in the early 90s. Almost becomes what defines that person. And it's just crazy to me that for the rest of time, when Roy Halladay's name comes up, the first thought in someone's mind is going to be, "Wow, that guy died way too young."
Yeah, what I like to hear was Brandon McCarthy say he was your favorite player's favorite player. As simply as can be said, I think that told the story of Roy Halladay. Well, one thing I got to ask you, and it's a little bit sensitive, but you got to balance the human side of things with the news side of things. TMZ posted like raw video of them finding his plane and of him quote unquote showboating. You know, where do you stand on that? Because it's obviously very raw to his family who is still grieving, but at the same time, it is newsy. you know, I'm really uncomfortable with it, but at the same time, as a journalist, I'm like, I don't know what is right to do here.
Yeah, this is. I'm glad you asked that question. I mean, this is an internal conversation that we had in our newsroom a couple hours ago when this TMZ Sports report first surfaced with the video. You know, I know that the responses to the TMZ tweet when they sent out the link were like, this is classless, this is tasteless, have some respect. But this is relevant information. I mean, this is eyewitnesses who had video of Halliday's plane going up and down. I think that the word the TMZ article used was showboat, which is kind of like an assumption. And that's kind of that's not a type of word I would use when throwing this report up on our website.
That's not very journalistic, which, again, TMZ and journalistic is cats and dogs, so on.
Yeah, but I mean, I do think it's relevant information. Everybody's wondering what the cause of this was. I did a little research yesterday just into the type of aircraft that it was, and Halliday was actually the first recipient of this model of plane. It was a 2018 A5 Icon aircraft, and this company, I don't know if Halliday was partnered with them or what the deal, what the relationship was, but they awarded this plane to Halliday as the first recipient of it, probably because they knew how much he loved flying, and also because he'd be a good marketer of the plane itself, and he was. I mean, if you go through his Twitter timeline, it is so eerie to see all the pictures, all the videos, all the tweets of him in this plane talking about how much he loves it. There was a recent tweet where he said that he had a conversation with his father, who was a pilot, and he told his father, "It feels like I'm in a fighter plane." And his dad replied, "Well, it's because you are in a fighter plane." And just to like read that stuff, very eerie. We're all wondering what the cause was. You know, Halliday had about 10,000 hours in the air. It's not like he was a new pilot. He had been doing this since 2013, and he grew up in a flying family and always had these kind of aspirations to do it after his playing days were over. So, you know, I don't think it was a lack of experience, but until we find out just why it happened, it's, you know, we kind of got to withhold what we say about it. But I mean, just to answer your question, that TMZ report, that's definitely newsworthy information. I don't think it's insensitive to post something like that.
Well, before I let you go, I kind of want to give you time to riff on an open-ended question here. But, you know, how are you going to remember him as a man, as a career, as his career? As, you know, take it wherever you want. I mean, anything that you haven't touched on to this point in this podcast, well, you know, when you tell your kids or your nephew, for instance, you know, Eric's little boy, what are you going to in 20 or 30 years when someone says something to you, "Hey, what about this Roy Halliday guy?" You know, what are you going to say?
I would say that, you know, when Eric and I, my brother Eric Simon, another baseball, he used to be a baseball writer, Baseball Prospectus, Fangraphs, et cetera. When we were growing up, he was our favorite pitcher, period. That was when he was on the Blue Jays. And we just loved watching him because he was such a quick worker. He was so, like, in command. And it was despite not having – it's not like he threw 99. He just was able to put the ball literally wherever he wanted it. Nobody was better at manipulating a baseball with a two-seamer or cutter. And – you know, when he became a Philly, it was so surreal. Like, this guy that you spent your entire life watching and idolizing, now you get to watch him every fifth day. So it was definitely, you know, I'll remember how happy it was when the Phillies acquired him in the winter of 2009 going into 2010. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I ever saw him up close, it was at a Cole Hamels charity event. And what stuck out to me then was, you know, you have this larger-than-life figure, the best pitcher in baseball, and he was such an unassuming guy. He didn't like attention, very to the point, very direct, didn't talk more than he needed to. But yet at the same time, you know, being a reporter who wanted to talk to him, you know, often, pitchers aren't always the most accessible people. They, you know, they talk after their start, but in between starts, sometimes they kind of want to be low key.
Also, you anytime, can't talk to a pitcher on their pitching day. I don't think a lot of people know that. Beforehand, you can't talk to the starter.
Right. It's definitely a no-no. But Halliday, I'm not going to say that he was like a media darling, but anytime that people did want to approach him, he made you feel comfortable. I mean, he had a sense of warmth about him that you can't say many players in the common game have. And, you know, that's, I'm just going to remember all of those things. One other thing that I'll remember is, you know, something that sticks out is in 2010 and 2011, when he was just pitching at an all-time high level, won the Cy Young in 2010, in 2011, put up almost the exact same numbers and was the runner up. There were so many games where there would be two outs in the eighth inning, runners on second and third, Phillies up like 3-2. Charlie Manuel would go out to the mound to take Halliday's pulse, you know, see where he's at, and Halliday would always fight to stay in the game. And Charlie would always let him stay in the game because of all that he had accomplished. And it seemed like literally every single time that happened, Halliday would get the final out. And it would be this big dramatic moment. You know, I'll remember that. there was an article that I found today that I wrote in 2013 when he retired about how if ever there was a player who deserved a World Series ring, it was him. And that's just another crushing aspect of his career, that this guy put in, you know, he threw 40,000 plus pitches in his career and made only 5 playoff starts because he just was in the wrong place at the wrong time in the AL East. And by the time he got to the Phillies, despite their 102-win season in 2011, they were a quick playoff exit in that year against the Cardinals. Halliday pitched Game 5, gave up 1 run. Literally, the second batter of the game singled in a run, or doubled in a run. That was the only run scored in that game. And it's just, I mean, everybody in this organization wanted to win that year for him. Carlos Ruiz, Chase Utley, Ruben Amaro Jr., the general manager. I mean, the Phillies spent a very long time trying to get Roy Halliday. And once they got him, I think that they thought that it was going to lead to multiple more championships, and it didn't. But, I mean, all of those things, it's tough for me to put it into one succinct statement because this guy meant like a hell of a lot to a lot of people in this area.
Yeah, I know I don't speak for you, but I'm sure you'll concur when I say I'm just going to miss the hell out of him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just the way it is. And, I mean, at times like this, it's like you find a lot of the baseball world kind of leaning on each other for support and to kind of make each other feel better.
Yeah. Well, Roy Halliday obviously gone too soon at age 40. Corey, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate you coming on and making time for us.
Anytime, man.
You got it. This has been Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.